Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party Book.com. It is Friday night, and we're about to open our show. And I'm just listening to Mike Savage, and he's suing England. Yeah, as a matter of fact, last night's headline for my show, I put Michael Savage captured in Scotland was hanged, drawn, and quartered. And he is to be buried alongside William Wallace. Unbelievable. Those Brits, boy, they really know how to torture, don't they? Obama said that Winston Churchill was against torture. Let me tell you something. Obama's got to go see the movie, The Wind That Shakes the Barley. He'll learn a little bit about torture. You know what he needs to do? He needs to go up on Fallujah Bridge. And just check to see if there's any body parts left still hanging from the bridge. Yeah, he needs to know. He needs to know about torture. He needs to go to an Iraqi rape room. He needs to go to the Kuwait Zoo when the Iraqis occupied Kuwait and watch the truckloads of Kuwaiti women being unloaded, mothers and daughters being offloaded for the troops. Yeah. He really needs to know about torture. And I told you about Nancy Pelosi needs to be waterboarded. It's the only way we're going to get the truth. Torture. These people have no idea what torture is all about. They have no idea. They live in a la-la land. They live in a make-believe world. They make movies. The only violence they see are the violence against women movies. I call it blood porn. It runs 2-1 against anything else that Hollywood has. Blood porn. That's what it is. Women are being stalked. And then those are rehearsals for real life. And like I said before, and I'll say it again, ladies, join the NRA and learn how to use weapons. You should not be intimidated by weapons. You should not be afraid of them. You should know how they work. And God forbid that one falls into your lap in a struggle, you want to know how to pull the trigger. So, having said that, I'm going to talk to you about real torture. I'm going to tell you about a sad story. On the front page of my local newspaper is a picture of a Boy Scout. And the Boy Scout is holding a trophy arrow that was given to him as part of his merit badge for archery. And inside the trophy arrow is another arrow. And they say it was a million to one shot, and he made it. He made a million to one shot, and he split the original arrow with the second arrow. How's that? That picture was taken 9 years ago. Today he's coming back from Iraq. This is a kid who was born to serve mankind, born to serve his country, the land that he loves, and he's coming back from Iraq tonight. And he's missing two legs, one arm, and one hand. And only 9 years ago he was a Boy Scout. And now he has made the ultimate sacrifice. So he was in an IED explosion in Iraq. Okay? And that IED came from Syria. Syria is the home of IED manufacturing. The same IED that killed Prime Minister Hariri in a murder attempt by Bashar al-Assad and the Syrian secret police. Okay, the same IEDs that kill Maronite Christians in Lebanon, manufactured by Bashar al-Assad and the Syrian government. That same IED that kills Americans day in and day out in Iraq. All came from Syria. And guess who went to Syria to lick the ankles of Bashar al-Assad? Demanding a bigger aircraft to accommodate her entourage. She loaded the craft with people like Senator Nelson, Congressman Kucinich, and the Speaker of the House. One of her first missions was to go and endorse the IED manufacturing facilities in Syria. And now this woman is coming under fire. She will never suffer the same fire that this young Boy Scout turned warrior suffered. He's also got burns, and his face has been damaged. Okay, you can imagine what kind of shape he's in. They didn't expect him to live. And the first place that's going to greet him is his grammar school, Our Lady Star of the Sea, on Staten Island. His last name is Maracco, M-A-R-R-A-C, I think C-O, and his mom's a nurse. And just 9 years ago, he was a Boy Scout getting a merit badge. And what's really sad is the media has made you forget the war in Iraq, and they told you it's over. But this guy was just maimed a couple of weeks ago. And the war is not over. And never forget, there's 150,000 American troops in Iraq. Now, does that tell you the war is over? What, they're all waiting to get on the bus? You think about that. And here's something else to think about. Last night I talked about a cartoon that was in the New York Post that the left put up in its war against Bush. And the cartoon outraged only veterans and nobody else cared. It got very little attention, except the liberals got a few chuckles when they saw it, because the cartoon showed a GI with his head bandaged sitting in a recovery bed in a hospital, and his legs are missing and his arms are missing, and Donald Rumsfeld is standing next to him. And then they had some sort of quip, you know, to take down the Bush administration for the war. But you won't see the Washington Post now when they have another GI who, on Obama's watch, lost two legs, an arm, and a hand, and has had facial damage and bad burns. You won't see any cartoon showing Obama or Secretary of Defense Gates standing next to that hospital bed. No, that's coming. This GI is coming back being slipped under the rug. Okay, there'll be no greeting for him by the President of the United States. There'll be no greeting for him by the media. There'll be no welcome home for him. The mayor of Bloomingdale of New York will not give him the keys to the city, like he gave it to Harvey Milk posthumously. And Donald Trump won't be hugging him or surrounding him with kudos. Yeah, we're a takedown nation. Take it down. Take what you can get before you take it down. So, Mr. GI Maracco, thank you for what you did. I cannot repay you. The only consolation I can give you and your parents is to let you know that by your bravery, you saved my family from annihilation, because the reason that you were in Iraq was to prevent another 9-1-1, and by your sacrifice, you have done so. So my family and myself, we owe you a debt that cannot be repaid. Thank you, you saved our lives. And as you struggled to learn how to walk all over again on prosthesis, and you get discouraged, which I don't think will happen often because you're a winner, think about those who have struggled just like you have. And one day, you'll be able to lead a parade. If I hear one more politician stand up there and say that small business is the backbone of America, I'm going to jump up and ask them, why are you trying to break it? Tonight we're witnessing 2,000 small car dealerships getting liquidated, getting thrown out of the franchise game, okay, because they don't generate enough car sales. Now, what does that tell you? That's the same as a small farmer being trampled under. That's the same as any small business person being trampled under. The politicians have no respect for small business whatsoever. As a matter of fact, if they could tax them out of existence, they would do it tomorrow. And it's really sad. And it's sad to see 2,000 dealers left to dangle in the wind. And I hope that those 2,000 dealers get together and promote a new vehicle, or get into some sort of a used car program where they can survive. And I guarantee you, they're probably they're better entrepreneurs than the big guys at the top who have no idea what they're doing. So, say a little prayer for those 2,000 independent. They probably got their life savings in those dealerships. They're just too small to be bothered with. And the day that a union member has to cast his vote under the eyes of his supervisor, so his supervisor can see who he's voting for, he's no longer an American. He's a Soviet. Next, they'll have the ACLU sitting in churches hearing confessions with a priest.
I've been away from you a long time. I never thought I'd miss you so. Somehow I feel your love is real. Near you I want to be. The birds are singing, it is song time. The banjo's drumming soft and low. I know that you yearn for me too. Swanee, you're calling me. Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee. I'd give the world to be among the folks in D-I-X. I even know my mammy waiting for me, praying for me down by the Swanee. The folks up north will see me no more when I get to that Swanee shore. I love the old folks at home. The world will be among the folks in D-I-X. I even know my mammy waiting for me, praying for me down by the Swanee. The folks up north will see me no more when I get to that Swanee shore.
You'll hear me talk from time to time, and in my book I refer to the DNC as the Party of Death. DNC is the Democrat National Committee, but I say it stands for Dilatation and Curettage, because they are the pro-death party. It's actually pro-no choice, because the kid doesn't have a vote. And more and more people are now starting to realize that if it has a head and arms and legs and it looks like you, it must be a kid. No matter at what a stage. And of course, the Gestapo has always told us that the fetus, they had a fetus, a solution to the fetus problem, and that a fetus was not a child; it was just tissue. And of course, my argument is, you know what? Let me be your dentist, and we'll check your tissue without a Novocaine. But DNC stands for Dilatation and Curettage, and that is the Chop Chop Party, and that's what they're doing. And if you want to know what abortion looks like, you know what you do? Go around back and see what's in the dumpster. Go around back of any abortion clinic on a busy day and see what they're throwing in the garbage. Oh, they don't do that. They do it. And DNC also stands for a divide and conquer. That's the policy of the Party of Death, a divide and conquer. So I thought I would look up a divide and conquer and check the description of it, and here's what it says. In politics and sociology, divide and rule, and it's derived from the Latin divide et impera, also known as divide and conquer, is a combination of political, military, and economic strategy of gaining and maintaining power by breaking up larger concentrations of power into chunks that individually have less power than the one implementing the strategy. In reality, it often refers to a strategy where small power groups are prevented from linking up and becoming more powerful, since it is difficult to break up existing power structures. Small power groups, like 50 states. The maxims divide et impera, or divide ut regnes, are traditionally identified with the principle of government of the Roman Senate. This attribution is not entirely reliable, insofar as the Roman policy mainly aimed to unite the conquered nations, both politically and culturally, under Roman rule. It is, however, borne out by the example of Gabinius parting the Jewish nation into five conventions, reported by Flavius Josephus in Book 1, 169-170 of the Wars of the Jews, Del Bello Judaico. Likewise, Strabo reports in Geography that the Achaean League was gradually dissolved under the Roman possession of the whole of Greece, owing to them not dealing with the several states in the same way, but wishing to preserve some and to destroy others. And in modern times, Traiano Bacchellini cites divided impera in La Biblia Politica as a common principle in politics. The use of this technique is meant to empower the sovereign to control subjects, populations, or factions of different interests who collectively might be able to oppose his rule. Machiavelli identifies a similar application to military strategy, advising in Book 6 of The Art of War that a captain should endeavor with every art to divide the forces of the enemy, either by making him suspicious of his men in whom he trusted, or by giving him cause that he has to separate his forces, and because of this become weaker. And that's why I call the Democrat Party the Divide and Conquer Party, because that's how they rule. They pit one against the other. And there are many factions in the United States today who unknowingly have become the tools of communists, who have played them, be it the race card, the homophobe card, the anti-Semite card, and God knows what other cards. So I just thought I'd give you that a little bit of a divide and conquer information, and that's what the Party of Death does. They pit one group against the others. Just take a look at the kidnapping of Ilian Gonzalez. Could you believe that Latinos would not be united to protect that child? That the Party of Death, the DNC, the Dilatation and Curettage Party, okay, who has destroyed Notre Dame University, it will never be the same anymore. Already people, I'm sure, are looking for other places to send their children. And I think we're going to hear more discouraging news about Notre Dame University very soon. But the Party of Death, the Divide and Conquer Party, managed to turn Haitians against Cubans and Puerto Ricans against Cubans in the Ilian Gonzalez flight to freedom. And what was the excuse they gave? The boy belongs with his father, who stood up on the tarmac of the airport and gave America the finger, and brought drugs to load his son up with Cuban propaganda. How's that? And what did they do? They did the same thing I told you about yesterday. They used the Mary is Ahua scenario. They labeled his mother Ahua. And that's how the Democrats get women. They nail them to the Putana cross. And that's what they do. And Catherine Willey. Poor Catherine Willey. Right? As soon as you go up against a Democrat pervert, you are. If you blow the whistle on a rapist and he's a member of the Democrat Party, you're labeled a whore. And if they couldn't get Catherine Willey, they threatened to kill her cat. How's that? And that's how they do it. And that's what they did to Ilian Gonzalez's mother, who risked her life, who gave up her life to bring her son to freedom. And what did we do? Chuck Schumer stood up and said the kid was too young to know freedom. How's that? I'm surprised he didn't call for an abortion. hang in there. We'll give you a tune to depress you. I'm listening to Mark Levin, and he's got somebody sitting in for him who's very good, and he's calling for the resignation of Uday Pelosi. And I say she should resign just for going and giving aid and comfort to the enemy when she went to Syria. That was a charge of treason that she ducked. So I don't care how they get her. Get her any way you can. Get rid of her. It's ironic, isn't it? We're a real screwed up country. You take a look at O.J. Oh, let's face it. O.J. murdered two people. And he was acquitted by a jury of his peers. And the black community knows that he murdered his wife and that young man. They know that, but they wanted justice for, they wanted freedom for O.J. because 100 years of suffering, and therefore even the evil have to be released. But that's not fair. That's not justice. That's not the kind of justice you'd want for yourself and your children. But, so what happened? O.J. walked on the murder of two people. The alleged, I gotta say alleged. He walked on the murder of two people. So how did they get him? He got life in prison for stealing a baseball card. Oh, God. Can you believe that? Yeah, I sentence you to be hanged by the neck until dead. Because you have a Mickey Mantle card in your possession. Oh God, I don't. And you talk about screwed up justice, man. I stay away from courts. I don't want to go there. I don't want to be there. I never want to be there because I know there's the last place there's justice is in a courtroom. So I'm listening to the guy that's sitting in for Mark Levin. He's very good. He's very fair, and he. I tell you, he just read off a litany of names of the people that are behind this Notre Dame scandal. And you know what? They've all been bought off. All the people on the board of directors of Notre Dame that pulled this stunt, including a Reverend, not so Reverend Jenkins, they're all on the take. How's that? They're all on the. They're part of the Illinois Mafia. Yeah, he read off a list of names, and he said you can see all the names at a website that he disclosed, but I forget what it was. But if you Google this Notre Dame thing, I'm sure it'll come up. And who sits on the board of directors, and how much money they got from Obama? It's all about the money, as Mike Savage says. Well, anyway, this fellow that's sitting in for Mark Levin, he's playing a tribute to the 60,000 graves in Normandy and the people who died to protect us from ourselves, as it turns out. And he played Sandy Patty's Star Spangled Banner. So I'm going to play you two Star Spangled Banners. One is going to be a 911 Star Spangled Banner. And the other is going to be the Star Spangled Banner that was played by the original cast of World War II. Just before D-Day, this song was recorded on vinyl. And there, I apologize for the scratches in the record, but every time you hear a scratch, just do a little mental calculation. And assume that each scratch is 8,000 Americans who died in a second to save this country. I think there's 27 scratches. You think about that. So let me give you one Star Spangled Banner.
A gargantuan explosion. Oh my God, I don't believe it. The northeast corner has exploded in the most incredible explosion. Flames are flying out of the building. They're 5-10 stories high now. Black billowing smoke. The building corner, the whole entire corner is gone.
Both World Trade Center buildings in New York City right now, heaps of rubble. At 9 o'clock this morning, a plane crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan.
I heard the noise. I was in my office, and I heard the guy screaming. So I ran out, and everybody was saying, oh my God, and they're in tears, they're crying. Everybody's upset.
I was just trying to make phone calls. I looked up, and I heard an explosion, and then I saw everybody in the street react first. People crying, people on the ground, everybody lying down. And then I looked up, and I saw this huge plume of smoke, and the tower just crumbling. And it just turned into a huge plume of smoke, and next thing you know, there's smoke in one tower.
Shortly after 9 o'clock, a second plane crashed into the second tower.
Oh, my God. I heard a noise coming in incredibly low. And then I was standing here looking out the window, and I knew it was going to crash, and something was going to hit the building. I dove away from the window because I thought the explosion was going to implode the windows and I'd be shattered with glass flying out. As soon as it hit, I came back and there was a ball of flame.
I'm still shaking. I saw it hit the tower and flame everywhere.
Then minutes later, President Bush in Sarasota, Florida, called those crashes an apparent terrorist attack and a national tragedy.
Today we've had a national tragedy.
First. And the Russians got it second, thanks to the Rosenbergs. Yeah, you think about that. So now let me give you the second Star Spangled Banner for the people who paid your dues. And never forget this. Nobody touched us when that generation was around. Nobody dared touch us. And you see what happened to those who did. And now today, we're worried about if Al-Qaeda is comfy. How are we going to win this war? We can't even stay married. We can't even beat drugs. How are you going to beat terrorists? Comedy Central is using up their George Carlin footage before he gets forgotten. They're trying to get the last buck out of George. And they showed a young George Carlin, and he was talking about how America is so war crazy. They have the war on poverty, the war on drugs. He goes, even that Star Spangled Banner, they have rockets and cannons in it. And I said to myself while I was watching him knock his country, burn in hell, George. Burn in hell, baby. Yeah, there's good money in knocking your country, knocking your God. You can make a fortune knocking your God. Let me give you the second installment of the Star Spangled Banner. And you know what? I want you to feel the ocean's roar. When you hear that drum roll, it sounds like a rising mighty wave. You think of how great that greatest generation was. And they took credit for nothing. They were humble people. You would never even know they were in combat. And now we're waiting for Arnold Schwarzenegger to save us from robots.
There's one thing that you men will be able to say when you get back home. And you may thank God for it. 30 years from now, when you're sitting around your fireside with your grandson on your knee, and he asks you, what did you do in the great World War II? You won't have to say, well, I shoveled shit in Louisiana.
Did you feel the power and might of the United States in that Star-Spangled Banner? Did you feel those two big Liberty Bells? And that's why we used to be Top Gun. Now we're bottom drawer. We've wiped out our industrial base. Everybody tells us we don't need it. All the lemons tell us we don't need it. They're waiting for the next great technological advance. But it seems to me that we've been waltzing around space for at least 10 years and doing nothing. NASA seems to be asleep. We're not making any major advances. And I think that unless we all come together as a nation and we bring back and breathe life back into small business, we're all going to be government employees, and we're not going to like the lack of food at the gummy store. We have to do everything ourselves, from manufacturing the smallest screw. You see how they've taken over our country. We're not even Americans anymore. They put us on a metric system. Well, we're going metric. For what? For what? Why did we go metric? To make it easier for our enemies to come here and take over? I heard this guy sitting in for Mark Levin tonight. He hates the French. And I got my own thing about the French. And never trust a country that kills its patron saint. Yeah, Joan of Arc was burned at the stake by a bunch of faggots. A faggot is a bundle of sticks. So don't get upset. Yeah, and never trust a country that has a change of balcony flags every 4 years. Yeah, and everybody, the most popular flag in the world is the French flag. What's in your back pocket? Hang in there. Excuse me, sir, are you an American citizen? Yeah, I be American citizen. I love this country. Everything free. My house free, mortgage free, social security they gave me for free. I love this country. Everything free. I don't even pay at the subway. I love this country, and I don't pay tolls on the bridge. I just... Sir, they're talking about bringing the draft back. A draft? What's draft? You have to serve in the military. Oh, I don't like this country no more. I think I leave now. This will be my last parade. How much for the American flag? It's $2, sir. $2, come on. Guy sitting in for Mark Levin tonight is Tom Maher, and he's very good. There's two things that I would like to see before too long, and one of them is Obama's proof of citizenship. I don't want to find out that we've elected an illegal alien. And we have to live with it. I don't want to hear we have to live with it. I'm not gonna take that well. Okay? Because it won't be Obama's fault. It will be whoever set him up. And knowing that he didn't have papers. So that's one thing. That's one question I'd like to see answered forthwith. And the other one I'd like to see, but I'll never know. And you should like to know also, is who sold America short before 9/11? Wouldn't you like to know how the airline stocks were doing about a month before 9/11? Isn't there a way we could get the trading records? You don't think George Soros sold the two airlines short, do you? You think about that. You think about that. Does that give you an idea? You know what I also worry about? I worry about Russians who sell nukes on the black market and make so much money that they retire to any place but the United States. Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? So, hang in there. Oh, here's a good one for tonight in tonight's newspaper. A well-renowned Catholic high school had a kicked their entire senior class out of the building yesterday after a handful of students showed up drunk. And the parents are outraged. You know what I say? I say that senior proms should be accompanied. Parents should have to come and dance with their children. And we'll put an end to all this horse crap. Yeah, but I don't blame the kids. The kids are wild. They got, you know, this is it for them. You know, it's their last fling that they're going to have at this stage of their life. But the parents who defend their sorry asses are the ones who should be getting the lash. They need a little Iranian justice. Yeah, how sad. And you know what? I give the principal credit. He called an assembly and threw them all out. Principal Douglas McManus, he kicked them out after he noticed several had been drinking. Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You don't know where to send your kids today. And if this is going on in the Catholic schools, can you imagine what's going on in the public schools? And another great Catholic school last year caught the football coach loan sharking and selling cocaine. How's that? In a borough where many of the dads are cops and firemen. I'm sure that goes over real big, doesn't it? Yeah. How great thou art. Unbelievable. And I could just hear that coach telling and bragging to his friends, oh, these kids got a lot of money. They got plenty of money. And it's never seen it so easy to get. How sad. And what is there, a handful of priests trying to hold it all together? And they're coming under fire for being too tough on the kids? Yeah. Let me tell you. There's a song I played last night called Black Slacks. And in the song, the guy sings about the peg of the pants. That in the 50s, that was a big thing. You got your pants pegged. That was a sign of being cool. And a 14 peg was a conservative peg. If you were a real pistolero, you got an 8 peg. And, of course, it was good business for all the tailors. The tailors were having a ball. They were raking in the money hand over fist. Everybody bought a pair of pants. They got them pegged. Like the Pachucos, you know, like the Zoot Suiters. And I can remember a guy named Santos Castelluso who showed up for the 9 o'clock children's mass with a black pegged pants with an 8 peg, and he had a fuchsia saddle stitching down the sides, and he had pistol pockets, short-throughs pistol pockets. And Montaigne was outside the door, and as everybody was going into church, he said to Santos, "Son, where are you going?" He says, "I'm going to church." "No, you're not, son. Not dressed like that. Go home, put some clothes on." Imagine that. He'd be back with an ACLU lawyer today and his parents. Unbelievable. "Son, where are you going?" You know who I feel sorry for at this Notre Dame fiasco? This pro-choice, Notre Dame pro-choice rally? I feel sorry for the Pope that he has to watch this. I'm sure that, you know, he's insulated to a great extent by his cardinals and bishops who surround him. And they must keep him from being distressed. But to see a prime Catholic university endorsing abortion, and that's what they're doing, it's heartbreaking. And I see Fox interviewed two girls who were from Notre Dame, and one girl was part of the pro-life group, and she looked like she had been working hard, you know, trying to get things going. And she wasn't dressed very fancy. She had a dungaree jacket on, and she spoke the Catholic point of view, as I know it, as I learned it from those people who taught me right from wrong, who knew right from wrong. And then they had the opposing devil's advocate, and she looked like she was dressed for the ball. She had on a beautiful black dress, and she had a beautiful necklace, and she was saying it has nothing to do with abortion. We're just welcoming the president. Come on. Give me a break. If Jesus was at the Last Supper and it was all Notre Dame students, you know what he would be saying? A 52% of you are about to betray me. And because I think that the pro-life Notre Damers are in the minority. And that's really sad. That's absolutely sad. But it seems like you get in trouble in college and somebody knows where there's a good abortion clinic. And that's great, isn't that? You send your daughter to college to get knocked up. Fantastic. Made a mistake, they call it. Yeah, maybe I'm heartless. I come from the old school. You danced, and now you have to pay the fiddler. Or as somebody who I love says, I have to learn everything the hard way. He has a t-shirt that says, I have to learn everything the hard way. It's sad. It's really sad. But you know what? The universities are not preparing these kids for life. They are not at all. None whatsoever. Today, the age of reason in the United States is 29 years old. You think about that. You think that there were guys who died in World War II who didn't turn 17. They lied about their age to get in so they could fight for their country. And now the legacy is the I'm taking everything generation. Or as the census takers declare, 1.4 children. You wonder, one child. What happened to the rest? There's a sport in one of the universities upstate New York. It's called cow tipping. They go out into the fields and they tip the cows over while they're sleeping. See, being from the city, I wouldn't know that. If somebody said, we're going cow tipping, I'd say, how much do we bring? $2? $5? Here's a tune for the unborn who are not protected by the Constitution. The absentee ballots, which is the other question I had. How many absentee ballots don't get counted in this country? Does anybody know? Is it 50%? So those GIs that are on the front line having their arms and legs blown off, when they send in their vote, as somebody throws it in the garbage? Is that what's happening? Who can guarantee my safety? So here's a tune for the pro-lifers at Notre Dame and doing God's work and getting no reward except the fact of personal satisfaction, knowing that by their actions, one life may be saved.
So long.
what you do to the least of my people, you do unto me, and that includes tissue.